Good afternoon and welcome, everyone. Today is Thursday, September 28, 2017. It is 2 p.m. This is the Josephine County Board of Commissioners convening for a general discussion. We have Commissioner DeYoung and myself here. I'm not sure where Commissioner Morgan is, but she was scheduled to be here and maybe just en route, as it would have it. We have Mr. Greg Rowe, the Executive Director of the Boys and Girls Club, as agenda item number one. Really a pleasure to have you here.
Yeah.
Yeah, lots going on.
Yeah, I do. And I defer her to. I can give you.
Get her one.
I'll get you one. So yeah, they wanted to come down and introduce ourselves for the crowd. My 7-year-old boy made that. You guys haven't been getting a lot of thank yous lately, so he thought you might want to get. He thought he'd send you a little thank you, but that's a 7-year-old boy. He's single family. Older sister and him. He been going there for 3 years now, since he was 6, and had major behavioral problems, so we got him into the art class, and you can see what a difference that, now he's got he's a lot more focused, a lot more behaved, and he wants to be an art teacher. So anyway.
That's so cool.
I will be very quick, but if she doesn't come, you guys have to
have
a
picture. We will get a picture,
so I promised him, because
she's on her way.
I'd do that. But again, like I was just telling you, my family's from this area. I just moved down from Albany. I was headed the United Way there and just took over this job. My wife works at RCC under President Kathy. And so I've been here for about a month and a half at the Boys and Girls Club. You guys know, services cost $1 a day is what basically parents are being charged for service. That includes meals, 3 meals a day during the summer, 2 meals a day during school year. We get all the kids are bused to our facility from the elementary schools and middle schools. And then on top of that, on top of the meals, they're getting homework help every day of the week, Smart Moves program, which is for boys and girls that deals with issues that young middle school kids are having to face, whether it's sex, drugs, alcohol, all those type of issues, and self-esteem issues, trying to teach them to be positive adults. You guys want to know some of the goals I had for here for our for the upcoming couple of months. Mostly, what I'd really like to see is for us to increase attendance. Increase our presence in the community is going to be key. We're looking at opening. We have sites in Cave Junction. We have here in Grants Pass is our big club. We also have talent. It looks like we're going to be possibly opening up a facility in Ashland. We're looking at talking with SOU, where I went to third generation SOU alum.
Wow,
so,
great.
Yeah, and so working with their family housing, seeing how we can partner also with RCC, working with some of their families or students to get their to get some care out there during all times when there's classes where you have a single mom,
sure,
like we met today out there, and she goes, I would love to have some kind of program going out there on Monday and Wednesdays where I could take those classes till 7 o'clock. So we're going to be working with President Kathy out there at RCC, seeing how we can also work with her students and just expand our presence in the community. Also,
Mayor Stromberg in Ashland would be a good reference. I know that Commissioner DeYoung knows him real well, and he's quite a guy. So he just got reelected last year, I think. So he'd be happy to help make connections.
Yeah, the school district has opened us being in there. And also, like I said, the president of SOU, I'm meeting with her on November 1st. And seeing how we can maybe start a program.
Commissioner Morgan.
Greg.
The trifecta is complete now, and we can get a picture. This is
picture,
a seven-year-old.
Seven-year-old made this.
So we got to get a picture of all of us for that picture.
Wow.
Yeah.
Isn't that nice? I look like Planet of the Apes. Maybe I do.
You look.
I like that they got your forehead just right.
She did. Got the wrinkles in the forehead.
So
that's cool.
You guys are actually his first presentation.
Commissioner Morgan's responsible for the one on the top. I'm the one on the bottom. Your wife's is in the middle. I don't know. Those are the wrinkles that are. who gets
as long as it's not a. Never mind.
Yeah, that's great.
Like
we'll get the picture right after your
palm reading or.
We're also looking at we're reviewing all of our sites, our child safety standards, making just tightening everything up on that. We've started doing parent orientations, making those mandatory. That way parents are more in contact with us. Surprisingly, some parents have been fighting having to come in and do an orientation and safety. it's for the safety of your kid. Yeah. So, you know, basically you're throwing a kid into a workforce of 300 other kids. You know, we need to be in contact with them. And, you know, if your kid is having an issue, make sure you call us. Tell us how your kid's doing. And so we're starting to make that mandatory. I think that's going to eliminate a lot of safety issues and making sure parents know what to expect from our programming, what we expect of the kids, and vice versa. And, of course, everybody knows now that my door is open. Call me anytime. This is my 75th meeting in the last month. So, yeah. Literally, I counted them up today.
Boy, that's a lot even for us.
Yeah.
So, that was just this week for us.
Yeah. But, you know, again, we're looking at also safety issues. You know, when you're looking at Talent and Cave Junction, which are at elementary schools, that's a little different. You know, it's a wide open campus, and we're really having to try to figure out how we make sure the kids are safe in those situations, too. So we're looking all the way through there. We're also looking at Cave Junction, which has a harder time funding that program out there and seeing how we can close that gap. We probably raise about $15,000 less than what we actually spend out there at Cape Junction for the site. So we're looking at how we can more stabilize that and add some programming out there, because my key is for all the kids to have the same programming, whether in Grants Pass or at Cape Junction or Talent. So every kid out there, every kid in this county deserves good programming and something productive to do after school. So basically our three priorities, you know, at the Boys and Girls Club is academic success, building good character and citizens. We have our Keystone Club, which actually we'd like to have one or two of you come and talk during our Heroes Week about citizenship, and that'd be great. I know you guys, some of you have been at the club before, but whether it's, we have both Cave Junction and the Grants Pass Club would like that. Maybe have you guys during Heroes Week, because obviously some kids think you're a hero, and you, I mean, you don't get thanked a lot, and you probably deserve it. So,
your guys' selection of Youth of the Year kind of a thing,
mm-hmm.
probably for 4 years. I wasn't able to do it last year, but that was really kind of an eye opener and quite mm-hmm. a program to evaluate the top kids throughout the whole. That was really neat. Maybe there'd be trade off or something.
Yeah, I think it's January 23rd. I'll make sure I get your contact info. We would love to have somebody at Youth of the Year as our premier event.
Right.
We had a young girl this year who made it to state. She made it to all the clubs have a Youth of the Year. She made it to regionals. Her name is Dazzy. She moved here, had a lot of issues at school. Just because of her skin color and bullied and so forth, and that kid is going to be going to college, and she's a little fireball.
Big difference.
And she started out at the Boys and Girls Club at 7 years old, similar to this kid, who had major behavioral problems until we got him into the art class. Obviously, he's focusing now.
Yeah,
But she is an amazing young woman, and we have more teams right behind them. So we're also expanding our team programming, which is key. Most of our kids are between 6 and probably 11, 12, 13. Then we start losing them. So we're trying to figure out how we get into the schools and how our team programming, which is the 16 to 18, how to increase that.
Neat.
Now, you mentioned it was $1 a day per student.
Per kid, yeah. So basically, you have $40.
Who pays that? Is it parents pay that?
Parents pay that. So you have a $40 membership, and then every month is $25.
And do you have like a sponsorship program?
We have the scholarships, yes. So we won't turn kids away. We really want every kid involved. But for $1 a day, the next closest organization is $197 a month. We're $25 a month. Yeah. And that's the next lowest person. I mean, we're that far below the next person.
What I'm asking about it is if there was a like a youth somewhere, not my kid, but if I said, you know, I'm concerned about that little guy, can I enroll him and pay and just be his sponsor?
I'll take your check any day of the week. You got that on record here. I'll do it. Yeah, you know somebody who's that. We'll make sure I'll always work to get a kid in. Any kid you really need, because I feel like if they're in the club, they'll feel better.
So, to kind of clarify, you couldn't enroll the kid, correct?
No, we would
the parent would, but you could pay for it.
Yeah. Your parent needs to, we're really tightening up security measures. We need to know, so the parent would need to come down, enroll them, and go through the, you know, orientation, and it's good for them to go through it anyway. They need to know what resources, like I said, are there for the family. So what we're also focusing on is not just the kids, but the families of these kids are growing up, you know. grown up with. So it's nice for them to get those parents connected to the club.
Have you ever been to their annual fundraiser for the Taste of the Rogue?
No.
I don't have $100 a seat to go to that event, so...
Real good event.
We pack it. We're already we'll have everything sold out by February 1st.
Yeah.
So it's our biggest event, and it funds a lot of our programs.
Right.
I mean, that's our biggest funding source right there.
And last year we cashed out a trust account that had been given to the county's stewardship, and so there was some money left over after all of the applications that had come in, and your predecessor put in an application for the balance, and so we cut a check last year for $21,000 out of that trust account to close it out to the Boys and Girls Club. You were on that. You made that decision. So
oh, that's right. Yeah.
So question for you.
Yes,
couple things. Most of my interaction was, one, I played sports there when I was a kid. I probably still have the T-shirt that shows I was on the Scorpions there. But I was involved with some foster kids, and I was a respite provider, so I was picking up kids from the club and all that kind of stuff, so kind of experienced the security side of seeing that side of things, but also the mixing of the kids of all ages, and wondering, you know, is there any steps to kind of keeping the junior high kids away from the elementary kids versus the high schoolers, so you're not exposing kids to things they're not quite ready for?
Yeah, exactly, and that's the key, is to keep them separated, like you said. And now we have, for example, our K-1 club, which is kindergarten, first graders, they have their own area. We have the 7 to probably 9 year old, at 10 year olds, in the big room, sometimes up to 11. And the big help was that big teen center. That is the teen center we built. So now teams don't want to associate with middle schoolers. So we, to get them involved, we basically had to build that, you know, that little addition to that building here a year and a half ago, 2 years ago.
Yeah, I remember when
through Rotary. Yeah, and that's helped separate those kids, because those big kids do not want to hang with little ones. So that's how we're separating that. We really don't have a lot of kids over 16 unless they're up in sports, and that's where we really need to do some outreach into the schools, because I feel we need to get some of those kids. Thankfully, Grants Pass High School and even Illinois Valley, they get every kid in that school is involved in something. So that's kind of, I think, it's hard for us to break that barrier, which is a good thing. The school is really heavily involved.
So one thing I'm curious about, in following when you're open and all that, it follows the Grants Pass School District. Yet Three Rivers does not always have the same days off.
Yeah.
And is there anything that you guys can do to accommodate the Three Rivers School District? Where transportation is a bigger issue. If they don't have the bus to get them there, they don't go.
Yeah.
And so if the school's not in trying to get kids involved and all that kind of stuff.
We're open during those days, full days. If we don't have bus service, we can't go around and pick up kids.
No.
But we do have, we had, you know, like during the summer, we'll have 45 kids there that parents are finding some way to get them there. So that's our daily average out there. I think it's about $45, and that's Jenna, has been running the club now for probably 5 or 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I'm going out there tonight to see how I work with the club. And that's another thing. I'm spending a lot of time in Cape Junction that hasn't been done before. So I'm really trying to make sure that I'm out in town in Cape Junction and making sure that their programs are the same, that those kids deserve the exact same programming that these kids do here. In fact, they got programming we don't have. So
if you spend any time with Jenna and any kids come around, you'll find they love her and they trust her.
Oh, they love her.
She's doing a great job.
She is, yeah. And I'm lucky in that both we just got a new director in talent. She's already made changes in 4 weeks, and it's been noticeable that the teachers are just excited. So
will you be participating in LADPC, or will it be the same gentleman who's been going the last
Fred?
Few? Yeah, is he going to continue to go?
Fred, I'm going to attend as many meetings as I can. Fred is kind of in charge of that area, but I'll be going to those meetings too, if at all possible. So
wonderful.
I'll be everywhere. You'll be seeing me around.
One of the partnerships that I've appreciated over the last few years is you guys have hosted parenting classes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we've had Community Corrections through their treatment program has referred many parents.
Yeah.
And what we found is when the meal's provided, when there's daycare provided, you get the parents attending in a safe avenue, and it's having quite an impact on bringing up Safer Kids. So thank you for being
part of
that.
Yeah, we're meeting with her next Tuesday, and I think we're going to expand that program. We were able to streamline it. I think we're going to try to get into the elementary schools. We were kind of talking about that yesterday in the meeting. So we're actually planning on trying to reach more families. Again, like I said, I want this to be a community center organization. I was lucky in that for the last 15 years, I was next to one of the best Boys and Girls Clubs in the state in Albany. You wouldn't think that little town has one, but it is one of the premier Boys and Girls Clubs. I'm just trying to copy a lot of what this, you know, they're programming and bring it here. So,
thank you for coming down.
Yeah. Now I need a quick picture for
Ken. The summer program spotlight. I was thinking, is there any other 4-H is what comes to mind as far as integrating with your kids with what they are doing? Mm-hmm. To expand the programs, and I don't know if that's a thought, but we're reaching out to Sue at the 4-H Extension office over on Ringette would be maybe a good place to start.
Okay. So. I'll write that down.
Yeah.
I'm open to
it.
The Boy Scouts are in there.
Right. We're the board for the 4-H Extension, too, so you just say the board sent you. That might help.
Yeah, I would think a lot of these kids who are, you know, here in the city would actually like maybe some programs.
Well, and there's
like
a lot of stuff that's not just animal based. Yeah. There's a rifle program, I think, and there's a sewing program and a agriculture stuff where they grow. I don't know. So
we're open to everything.
There's all sorts of stuff.
I guarantee I'm open to anything. So.
So you have a phone picture?
I promised him I'd take a picture with him. Sorry about all this Boys and Girls stuff.
Well, you probably should grab the picture.
You need the picture first, though.
Yeah. You got to stand in order.
Yeah. That would help. Stand in order. So let me get it.
I don't know if they'll recognize you by
your
name.
Yeah.
All right. One, two, three. Want to make one more? One, two, three.
That's a good picture.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Yep. It's great having a marketing department downstairs in the art room. I just say. Thank you.
Put that in the paper.
Okay.
Oh.
That's good timing. Julie tipped me off.
Okay.
So.
Great. Item number 2 is RR5, next steps. So it really should be the, should have been the title of the proposed ordinance. It's clear as possible when we advertise an issue. Okay. Where are we at?
Okay, specifically where we're at was there were several provisions that I think the board and persons in general would consider to be basically non-controversial. Right. And so the board had indicated you wanted me to, and I'll bring Julie up to speed on all that. I'll give a copy of this, but the board had indicated you wanted me to help to prepare the draft of an ordinance that would essentially advance on those points.
The non-controversial points.
Yeah, you can probably know which ones I mean, but. And other than that,
important from a standpoint that if this is referred to the voters, that we not convolute the issue with other stuff. So keeping it simple.
And I don't know which ones we would say are non-controversial or not. So
I can identify those if that'd be helpful.
I guess for me, the hardest thing that I'm trying to figure out is I don't see in our code and looking at the rural residential section of why commercial activities are offered at all. I don't understand why. I mean, there's a home occupation portion, and so why are Luxes ever been given for having commercial farms in rural residential with our current code?
That's been, I think, a question that's never been fully answered to my satisfaction, as far as I understand that there was some preliminary decisions made on planning staff's behalf that may or may not have been consistent with the code. And as a Lux is a land use compatibility statement, that it is compatible with the zone that it is, it may not be.
Well, the Lux statement doesn't ask if it's compatible. What it does is it
entitled this.
Yeah. The part that we're asked to fill out is the use prohibited in this zone? So that's what we have to check.
So it's the use, commercial activity is prohibited unless they get a home occupation permit or some other capacity. So,
well, the state defines production of marijuana as agriculture, and agriculture is allowed in that zone. So we have to check that the use is not prohibited in that zone.
Agricultural or agricultural, or commercial?
It's agriculture.
But when does commercial come into play?
Is there a distinction between agriculture, your garden, and a commercial garden?
Our code's very weak on that. What we have is we have something called commercial agricultural enterprise. And that's the closest thing we have to make a distinction, because agriculture in itself can be making money by definition.
By going to the grower's market.
Sure. And keep in mind, the medical marijuana is not supposed to be making a profit. So, you know, you can't really, can you apply it and say it's a commercial agricultural enterprise? I mean,
but I think we're just talking about Luxes and OLCC regulated right now,
okay,
kind of a deal. And I can see that, you know, by the statement of a compatibility, and that commercial enterprises may not just have a, is that legal in a residential zone? That's a challenge, because if it is outright legal, then why does anybody go get a home occupation in the first place? And that if you are doing a commercial recreational grow, shouldn't they need to also get a home occupation in addition? How do they sidestep that by just going through the OLCC process?
Well,
I mean, I'm just asking philosophically,
sure,
that we need to get our head around all of the nuances to this.
You know, because the code says we have to allow agriculture, we just say, is it an agricultural crop? Yes, it is, therefore it is allowed. It's kind of the way the code is interpreted.
But owning a mechanic shop, landscaping, those things are not allowed in an RR zone outright without a home oc.
Correct. As far as whether or not it can be as a home occupation, in the RR zone, there are certain things that are allowed as a home occupation, and it says that agriculture is a permitted use with criteria in residential zones when you're looking at your home occupation standards. I mean, it even says flat out in the home household occupation section, but that agriculture is flat out allowed.
But because
as long as it doesn't interfere with the neighbors and commercial, you know, go ahead, you.
And do they have, is that stating that they have to have a home, if they have applied for a home occupation permit, then marijuana falls right into that with everything else, like a welding shop?
Well, they wouldn't need a permit for marijuana based on our current home occupation standards, because we're exempting agriculture. I think the only way to not consider it agriculture is if there was some determination from the board. Remember when we were discussing processing and the board did a determination that cannabis processing would be treated the same or under the same category as perhaps meat processing? It's kind of that same thing. I think until the board defines that production of marijuana is perhaps commercial and not allowed in these zones, I think we've taken the approach that we continue to authorize it as agriculture.
Can we define, the state says over 12 plants is considered to be commercial? Is that what they're saying?
In so many words, yes.
So if a person wants to grow 12 plants, okay, you go 13 plants, now you are commercial, and you would have to get a license or permit, home occupation license for that.
Mm-hmm. Well, they wouldn't
like
need
like OLCC.
And I'm going to challenge that. I'm looking at our code and the definition under 11030, agriculture, farming, farm use, current employment of land for the primary purpose of obtaining a profit in money by raising, harvesting, selling crops, or the feeding, breeding, management, sale of, produce of, blah, 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 goes on to say, farm use also includes current employment of land for primary purpose of obtaining profit and money, stabilizing, and it goes on. Again, that's in direct conflict to the primary purpose in 62 that talks about rural residential's purpose. If agriculture is primary purpose of attaining a profit by money, and in rural it specifically says that the primary purpose is rural residential living, preserve the rural character while providing areas for zone classification lands committed to rural development, densities and everything else, the primary purpose is keeping a rural character for rural residential living. Making a profit isn't... you have two primary purposes here that are in conflict.
Not always, Commissioner Morgan. There's probably a dozen different agricultural commodities that you could do on a rural residential property that no neighbor's going to care that they're growing hazelnuts or whatever. It doesn't matter.
It's not about what the product is. It's about the primary purpose.
No,
the purpose
the
of residential or the purpose of making money.
And there's no conflict with raising hazelnuts in conflict with the residential purpose. And you said that it's okay to do agriculture as long as it doesn't affect your neighbors. Well, hazelnuts is not going to affect your neighbors. It's marijuana, the ones that, you know, you're required by OLCC if growing over 12 plants, you have to have a security plan. It may or may not include a fence. And it does include a security system. And you're going to have employees, I bet, come and trim and all of these other things that make it smells and lights and stuff that makes it bad for the neighborhood.
Yes.
So not significant.
Yes, thank you.
Well, I guess I'm just wondering definitions of purpose. It doesn't say the purpose is... Over here it says farm uses shall not interfere. It doesn't say significantly interfere, which in our definitions has significant interference. Here it just says not interfere. But going back to purpose, residential living versus making money are different purposes, regardless of the product. And that's why there is home occupation permits. That is a non-conforming use in a residential category. Agriculture, to me, by our own definition, does not meet the purpose of rural residential living. And the conflict is that we've allowed something that is not a non-conforming use.
I'm not going to debate with you on that. That's a matter of perspective. I will not endorse the idea that we're going to outlaw all agricultural commercial production on RR. I'm not interested in that conversation. I'm not even going there. We're given the authority to regulate time, place, and manner over commercial OLCC-regulated cannabis production. That's what I want to talk about.
We're actually given authority of time, place, manner on anything cannabis, not just commercial. The advisory question was commercial.
Right.
But it also states that if you allow agricultural, you have to allow marijuana anywhere. And so why are we allowing agricultural that's primary purpose is making money in a rural residential?
I just told you my position on agriculture in RR is going to be fine. I am given the authority, as this board is, to regulate cannabis in RR. Time, place, and manner. That's what I want to focus on. That's what I think we've been doing for a long time. If we change the proposal from what our initial direction is to expand that to agriculture, you're going to start all over again, needing your rural planning commission to hear it and such. So I'm going to bring it back to it's got to be within the confines of what the intent was from when we asked Ms. Smelter to draft text amendments. And I don't want to deviate too much from that.
Well, I still don't understand in our code why they're being issued. It doesn't...
Because agriculture is a permitted use in rural residential areas.
Well,
commercial agriculture is a permitted use in RR zones. That's why Luxes are being issued. And we'll continue to do so until the board says there's a moratorium or we do a text amendment that prohibits that. Is that not clear?
I don't see how allowing commercial agricultural activity will never be a conflict with the portion that says shall not interfere with neighbors. The noise and everything else, that's why you have the right to farm on exclusive farm use lands where you're going to make smells and noises on farm. Commercial operation is meant to be making money and making product at a level.
What are the smells from his blueberry farm that are... What is this? What is the impact on the...
Smells from tractors, smells from... Or sounds from harvesting or anything else. I've stayed... My family had a property next to vineyards in Napa for years, and the spraying that goes on 10 feet from the property line, whatever it is, but it says that farm use shall not interfere with the use of adjoining residential properties. And...
So we haven't had a complaint since I've been in office from your situation or any other agricultural... thing on RR. So interfere, I don't know. It hasn't been an interference. It isn't us to decide that there's an interference. We base our our enforcement on complaints, and we haven't had any, but we have had a lot on cannabis production and RR. So that's what we're focusing on.
Well, the question that was put to community development last year was looking at banning commercial property from RR, correct?
That was not last year.
Not a ban. That was the election question. We didn't ask you that. We asked them that.
So the ordinance
we
that we're looking at started
last
year.
To do a text amendment to figure out how to have some sort of a means of a balance between what we asked as a bookend, an outright prohibition, mm-hmm. and I don't need you to work too hard on that one. He can do that. I don't need you to do that text amendment. He can do that. What I asked you to do, what we asked you to do is, what's that sweet spot? Where's the middle ground of commercial operations on RR? If possible, what are those appropriate restrictions, setbacks, duration of time, number of plants, what tier, that kind of stuff. That's what we asked you to do.
When you talk about the amendments from last year, that's a totally separate order and set of amendments than what the order was from this summer. Last year's order was specifically looking at things such as setbacks, fences, etc. I think
for
it's
all
was
zones,
right. And that was correct.
And not all of them, a lot of them.
And those are still in the works. You know, those are still out there. We still have some lingering.
Yeah, we
that
did the easy ones first.
But then this year there was the new order, which is what this is about.
And frankly, getting this right is really important before you have potentially 1,000 or more medical who are considering trying to opt into the OLCC metric system. And if they're going to do that, they need to. So it's really important that comments, like we can't do boos, applause, questions from the audience in this situation. I'm going to be free to express myself how I need to without kind of secondary comments. So that's what we're trying to do, is get it right before we have it all. I mean, the 33 or 40 right now, yeah, that's an issue. But it's coming. It's going to be much, much more and exacerbate the problem if we don't get it right. So working on a way to figure out how, you know, maybe it is an outright prohibition. I've heard that there's a circulation of a petition to put it on a ballot soon. I would hope that we can lean into this and find that sweet spot better than just an all-out, you know, because there's a lot of good people who are doing it just fine, who are not having an impact on their neighborhood in a negative way. And they should be able to continue it and focus on the people who are the bad apples. But I feel like we continue to have this conversation over again, recycle it instead of making incremental progress on refining the proposal as it stands and getting it to a finished product in a time frame that conforms with our goal to have it somewhere around the January-ish implementation for people to understand for this next growing season.
Can it be as simple as saying, okay, if you're going to have 12 plants or under, just like the state says, that you don't need a home occupation permit. If you're going to go 12 plants or more, you're going to have to do the OLCC thing, and you're going to have to get up.
That's the law as it stands right now.
Okay, and
no,
then,
they
but
don't
on top
have
of that, you're going to have to
get a lux though.
You're going to have to get a home occupational permit or commercial permit or whatever we call it
we
at that time,
that.
So that it does go to your neighbors. That's part of that process is go to your neighbors and see, because there are people that I've talked to that out in the valley, and both valleys, in fact, that say, I don't have any problems with my neighbors. You want to canvass them? Go right ahead. Well, that's how that allows them a pathway, but it also invites input from their neighbors. Say, no, they're good folks, and I don't mind them doing that. It doesn't change the zoning of rural residential, but it does add the aspect of it adds the caveat that it is a home occupation.
You know,
and away you go.
That's evaluating it on a case-by-case basis with applicant and neighborhood and everything, and that may not be a bad way to go.
I mean, that
sounds real terrible for her, though.
It does.
It does, and we would need text amendments to that effect because...
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
Well, I'm not saying that. But I'm trying to say, you know, it's one that says, and especially in here, well, you can't, so everybody's out. And over here, you can't, so everybody's not out. And or everybody's in on one side and everybody's out. Where I think the thing is that it's... People, you know, you have a problem with your neighbor, but you know what? You don't have a problem with your neighbor that's growing. Mm-hmm. There is a group of people out there that wants to do it right. A lot of them show up in testimony. There's a lot of them that show up. The actual bad apples, I doubt if they ever
show up. So how do we address that, Commissioner DeYoung?
Big pardon?
We've heard that. How do we address that? And I don't think that everybody who's opting into the metric system from OHA is going to be required to do a LUX. That's not what I heard. I could be wrong, but I think that's what I heard you say. But
yes, that they're not required to do a LUX. Yes. Just
at some point in time, they do have to register for something with either OHA or OLCC, correct?
Correct.
Bingo.
Maybe.
There's your checkpoint right there. Yeah. And then if you're going to say, are you going to have over 12 plants? Yes, I am. Then you need to come in and get a home occupation variance or whatever you call it.
That was one of the recommendations that came out of the cannabis panel on Tuesday afternoon by one of our panelists that is a grower. Said we welcome the extra scrutiny because if we're doing it right, we will be able to mitigate those things. But that was exactly what was recommended, that you require it to be required in the home occupation, in the rural residential.
And that's already
and to
report.
Have that extra layer of scrutiny.
No.
So I want to we've talked about this before, and I just want to make sure everybody understands the home occupation stuff. Because
I'm saying we can change that amendment to require it. I don't care what it currently says. I'm saying I want to require it to have it.
Okay, so then we'd start over with a whole new separate set of amendments to define home occupation to include marijuana then.
Correct. If it's over 12 plants, if it's a commercial, it's not residential, therefore it would be required to go under subject of any other commercial enterprise in a residential zone. Not outright permitted, just simply you're having a business. If it's under 12 plants, they don't deem that commercial at the state level. Mm-hmm. So if it's deemed commercial, it would require it to have the extra scrutiny of what's your impact? Do you have water rights? Do you have roadway access? Do you have the setbacks appropriate to keep peace in the neighborhood? Whatever that is, that it would require that. And therefore, if we can check those off, great. You can go in that zone. If not, you need to mitigate these or do something smaller.
Okay, so with the home occupation, just some thoughts ahead. You're going to have to figure out, is it type 1, type 2, type 3? And keep in mind that with these home occupations, it's still not a public hearing where the neighbors have input on it, okay? With all of these, it's either type 1 permits are a regular permit, type 2 are site plan review, which means you get agency permits or comments and some neighbor comments. It's still based on standards. And then type 3 is your conditional use where the neighbors do get notice. Again, it's not a public hearing. They just get to comment on it. And we make those decisions internally at staff level as to whether or not those permits are granted.
So it goes 1, 2 is the highest, 3 is a middle? Is that how it is? Even though 3 is a higher number, it's... 2 seem to be more scrutiny because agencies and neighbors? Or is 3 the highest?
Is this situation unique enough to where we have to have, you know, not 1, 2, and 3, but have a 4 that targets exactly what we're looking
you
for?
You could have a
rather than try to craft something out of one of these and get this particular issue into what something that's already there? Or do we have the ability to craft something custom made for this particular industry at this particular time.
I think 2 and 3 would suffice. Specifically 3, where you are doing the notices to the neighbors, where you are, because that's what most other industries are getting. I mean, I've had other people say, I had to notify my neighbors. I had to look at the streets and everything else, the impact of what extra damage I'd be causing. And then the site review. We know that the OLCC folks have had to comply with our local building code. But Oregon Health Authority cardholders have not.
Well, they're supposed to. They just haven't.
Well, true, but there hasn't been the accountability from the state to work with us. And so the idea is that if you are registered with OLCC, you have to comply with and get those things in check so we don't have the issues of the compounds. We don't have the issues of the runoff and the trash and the other things that are causing health and safety concerns that we're dealing with some that aren't being scrutinized. Where if you go to the OLCC, you're not going to be finding those same things if they've been threatened with having their permits pulled. They're working to get those things accommodated. And to me, that makes the most sense, is that if you're going to allow something into a zone that's commercial, that's a residential thing that goes against the purpose of rural residential character by adding commercial, let it have a scrutiny. If it's not going to interfere per this criteria here that says shall not interfere, then we find a way to say that works. And this is why it works great. You're in compliance with your buildings. You're in compliance with this. Great. You're signed off. We're done. And then If it's not, give them a chance to mitigate them. Give them a time frame to say, okay, get that fixed, get that fixed, get this fixed. You keep working with them, and or they say, you know, it's not going to work. We realize this investment's not worthwhile.
So what you described is exactly what we have on the table before us.
Except I don't want to add a process of an annual inspection that may or may not get done when we already have a process with home permits, home use permits, which is already in the code.
I'm not sure the nexus of that. If we write it into the text amendment and approve it, that you're going to do annual inspections of the 40 RRs that are permitted under this non-conforming use, we will do those annual inspections. That's not a given. I mean, that's a given.
That's just the way it, and that's on it's other permits.
You.
We require annual.
Oh,
inspections.
It's not written that way here. That if they don't have to get a Lux, there's nothing to say they have to comply with the current code. If there's, and they're not going to be required to get a Lux. So how are they completing with the current code? It's still going to be based on.
Just take the Lux out of the factor, and if you look at the code period, it says any time you are developing, et cetera, you shall comply with local and state codes. Period. Anything you're doing.
But nothing is looking at the impact in the neighborhoods, or this interfering with residential property.
Well, ideally, when they create a zoning ordinance, the uses they allow in that district, the four. Fathers have thought that these are the uses that will be harmonious in that zoning district, and therefore the code was created that way.
True, but we found it's not harmonious.
Right, so then that would mean you effectuate a zoning change or change in the text.
Okay, and I'm
the cannabis industry. Because it wasn't here before.
Right, I mean, the code was written before the cannabis industry
sure.
became controversial. So now we have to look at the code and say, well, how are we going to, if there's an issue, how are we going to change that code? And the proposal is you're changing the code to say, hey, you can be grandfathered if you did everything right, and the only new ones we're going to allow are if you can meet 300-foot setbacks. That's exactly what's in front of you.
And I would suggest that grandfathering everyone in the county who currently is Oregon Health Authority is not meeting the desire of what the voters have said.
That's not what the text proposal says, Commissioner Morgan.
No, but if they're not required, if they're in compliance at the point they get into the OLCC because there was no compliance required, they're in compliance out of compliance. And we've been told that before.
This is a Wally question, but, you know, from all my, you know, if they were a legal, lawful, non-conforming use before, we'd have to grandfather them.
And every medical grower, if they're not required to get a Lux, how would you know if they're legal non-conforming?
If they have done, if a medical grower starting in post 1998, if they went through and got all their paperwork through OHA, we know that they were legal with the OMMP program, that part of it. And then we just have to make sure they were also legal with all their building permits. And that tells us they were legal. It's the same thing with OLCC. It's just different documentation that proves whether or not they were legal, a lawful, non-conforming use. Were they? Big question is, were you operating by the law before the code changed? If you were, you become grandfathered. If you weren't, you go away.
But can't we add that just say, okay, grandfathered in, but you have to get a permit or a license to do that?
And
you add that. If you're over 12 plants, following state definitions, if you're over 12 plants, you're going to have to get this.
And that's exactly what the proposal says. The proposal says that if you want to be recognized as grandfathered, you need a determination of non-conforming use. That is what we do on all non-conforming uses right now. That's not specific to marijuana. It's what we do on all. It's just reiterated in those amendments that you have in front of you. So that's exactly what you're suggesting is exactly what's on that paperwork in front of you. The paperwork in front of you, just to summarize, the big things on there are if you were doing everything by the book prior to codes changing, you can apply for a determination of non-conforming use.
Okay.
That letter says whether you are or are not in conformity.
Does that go to the neighbors?
No, that's something we have to determine, are they in compliance with codes.
Okay.
The neighbors wouldn't be able to determine
that.
You
change, how would you change that wording so that you hear from your neighbor? as to whether or not you're a significant impact on your neighborhood.
It'd be a type 3 home occupation permit.
No, they have a, by law, they have a legal, and Wally, and I don't want to speak on Wally's behalf, but,
not the ordinance,
but there's statutes and laws on non-conforming uses.
Yeah, that was what the confidential memorandum of September 12th was supposed to be addressing. But we can definitely touch base about that. Yes, I did manage to put you on that CC line. So. I think we did reach some conclusions about that.
Okay.
Our process right now is not meeting the needs of our community. So, yes, we have some text amendments that are trying to find a way to get there. I don't know that we have got there. But we, in asking a committee that is involved in the in the industry recommendations, there were four basic recommendations out of it. Do nothing. Wait.
Thank you.
Enforce the current laws and allow no commercial, agricultural, and rural residential, period. And the other one was to put it under the home occupation regulations and find a way that requires it to go through home occupation, where you're adding a level of scrutiny so you can see if it's an interference to the neighbors.
And that's fine with all the new ones, but what are you going to do with all those that predated the code? And we're in compliance.
We didn't.
I don't agree with the terminology of what's in compliance or not. I don't think that we're in a place of compliance. Otherwise, we wouldn't have the issues we're having. So, if there's a way to determine if you, I mean, we have, what, 34 that are already OLCC? So anybody that wants to go into OLCC, anything over 12 plants to go in the metric system, would have to apply for the application of nonconformance, or would they not have to apply?
Basically, anybody that is to code right now that wants to be grandfathered would have to apply for the determination of nonconforming use. Whether you're OLCC or medical, it doesn't matter to us. If you've done all your necessary paperwork and you've been approved by the state and you've gotten all your permits from community development, you would be eligible to be grandfathered by getting that certificate of nonconforming use.
I think we're trying to apply the whole cannabis industry into a set of rules that were written back at a time when the cannabis industry was under the cloak of darkness.
Absolutely.
And now, here we are in 2017, we put out an exploratory question on the ballot to the voter, and the voter came back very sizable margin, stating they didn't want any cannabis in our R5. So right now, commercial cannabis in our R5. And so we've got a definition from the state that commercial cannabis is going to be 12 plants or over.
More than 12, yeah.
More than 12 plants, 13 plants and up. So somewhere in the along the line, we are never going to get the rules we have in this book and all of this stuff. Is never ever going to apply, but I think it's very, very simple. If we use that 12 and 13 over 12 plants, is going to be, that's a commercial side. That answers the question that we ask on, that addresses the question we asked on the ballot. And at the same time, it also addresses the concerns. If we have a amendment, a mechanism, or whatever it is through planning that says, if you're going to be registered with the state for OLCC, and you're going to shift that gear into 13 plants and up, mm-hmm. You shift that gear, then guess what? You are going to have to go under scrutiny of your neighbors, so that if you truly are of no problem to your neighbors, they're going to not even respond. They're going to say, you know, the guy's a nice guy. But if you are a headache to your neighbors and you're not a good neighbor, then guess what? You're going to get a complaint, and then you come under review.
Well, you know, it's.
But we're not going to get these two. We're not going to get what we had before that did not include marijuana, because nobody even thought the cannabis industry would ever get to what it is, but it did with Measure 91. And in doing so, it really forced an undue hardship, I think, on people that they bought residential land and they had residences all around them, and now they're completely surrounded by marijuana, and we're not doing anything about it. And that's a frustration.
It's,
but I see the frustration of the grower, that he acted in good faith, and he's doing everything he wants, and he's got an upfront operation, no problem to his neighbors. He's got BLM behind him, and what we do here is going to put him out of business. And that's not fair to either one of them. This is tough.
You know, I think the easiest way is to separate it into two things, those that are there and those that are yet to come. When you're looking at those that are yet to come, it's really easy to say, let's say, no commercial agriculture allowed, and amend the definition to say it includes more than 13 plants. That's easy, right? You can deal with new marijuana grows out. That'd be a very easy solution to
do. Okay.
But then what do you do with the thousands that are already out there that have went by the rules in effect at the time they started their operation?
There are thousands that, and what do you consider that? Do you consider that thousands that are already rec grows? Because there aren't thousands. There's only hundreds that are rec grows.
No, but it doesn't matter whether it's a rec or medical. If they followed the rules at the time they started their business, the big question is, how do you deal with them now that the rules change? And there's thousands, right? Because we have medical grows that went in,
then
they got all their cards, they got all their
paperwork. Then they all need to go with finding out what their neighbors say. That all of them need to do it. Apply it to all of them. What would be wrong with that?
It's a question for Wally whether they can, because
I don't know. That's why I'm asking a question. I'm not legal. All I'm saying is that what we're doing, we can sit here and beat this thing back and forth across the net forever. Because what we have on board right now is not going to address the complaints that we're getting from the public and in response to our exploratory question. What we have right here doesn't do this. That's why you want to do some text amendments. But even if we say, well, okay, we're going to do it this way, that way, this way, it still doesn't address the problem of the guy that's got the investment. He's been there for 15 years. He's been growing medical marijuana for 15 years. He's followed all the things. He's never had a complaint one. And we're going to put him out of business.
These wouldn't put him out of business. They would say, if you've been a good grower like
then
that,
he has no problem. Then he has no problem filling out a deal where his neighbors have to fill out a questionnaire. He would have no problem whatsoever. But if you've got bad grows around you, you should be able to have, there should be something in place that says, I need to complain about this guy, and he doesn't get his permit. And we're back to
real quick clarification. Ms. Schmelzer doesn't do text amendments on her own volition. She's asked by the board.
Yes.
So just want everybody to know that Ms. Schmelzer, I'm sure, would rather be doing something else.
Wouldn't we all? But we're not going to, we can sit here and look at it forever, but I think we're going to have to change something. What we have, if everything we have on this table right now, including the packet and everything, it does not meet our goal, then we need to change it. We have to kick it around and change it. If it's not going to, there's not going to be one size fits all on this thing. It's just not going to happen.
Well, let's look at the goal again then. What is the goal?
I think the goal needs to be two-sided. Number one, a pathway for those who are doing it right, and satisfaction of those that are surrounded and invaded by what's behind door number two, the bad guys, and every one of them. I talked to them, I said, well, you know, did you ask the guy next door if he's off? Oh, he's perfectly legal. He told me so. But yet he can look and just say, how can stuff wads and sewage running down the sidewalk, down the bar ditch and stuff, how can that possibly be legal? Well, of course she's going to say he's legal. What's he going to tell you? No, I don't give a rip. A lot of them do. Get off my property or I'll shoot you. So therein lies the problem. There's two different pathways here. And I have respect for both of them. But what we have here does not address that. It doesn't keep both those people in the same room. The people that are doing it right and the people that have a problem that are complaining, and I don't know what these complaints are. There's 1,000 of them now. What more than that? I've got, I don't know how many. I'm up to 1,300 emails. But what I'm saying is those two people, the ones that want to do it right and the people that are complaining about the nefarious grows, they're on the same side. They're both against who's behind door number two, which is this huge group who claim they're doing it right, but yet they're not. No tracking for them, there's no nothing. The tracking system, the OLCC, is exciting, but you've got to have the guy say, yeah, I want to go to OLCC and hang my laundry out to dry. They're not going to do that. I don't know if it's going to cure the fact that the guy bought residential land next to you or you or you and is doing the bad thing. who do they call? Because you call OLCC and say, and they look, oh, no, that address isn't on our list, so you're on your own. You're back to square one again.
And so, there's a,
oh, go ahead. So, I just think that there's two factions in the room. Both of them have a very valid point, and I think they're both on the same side. They both don't want that. It's not going to be this board that kicks cannabis out of Josephine County. It's not this board. It's not the neighbors. It might be the neighbors. They signed the petition, put it on a ballot. It could be ugly. There's going to be all on one side.
There's some wording under the rural residential as far as that kind of seems to meet the need to me. It says reasonable conditions may be imposed in conjunction with the issuance of a conditional use permit, including but not limited to those designed to minimize or eliminate any adverse effects on persons residing or working in the neighborhood arising from the disposal of waste, creation of odor, generation of traffic, and creation of noise. Those are some of the big complaints that we've received. As far as when I attended a town hall in Williams, those were all of the complaints. And we have it in other sections, but it's not for this. And so it's kind of one of those things that, to me, having a conditional use permit, and I guess it's not needed because it's already allowed in the zone. And so, yet at the same time, that conditional use permit is the process that says, or when you get a building permit, how is this impacting the surrounding area? How have you met the needs of making sure you have enough water, you have enough road access, you have all this other kind of stuff, your lights aren't shining in the sky at night, you're not doing this and that. It all kind of comes under this conditional use permit designed to minimize or eliminate the adverse effects of waste, odor, traffic, noise, blah, blah.
Can you create a permit for cannabis growing? Just for cannabis?
Yes, you could.
So anything, because right now cannabis is the joker that we're not allowed to play with in the deck because we're not playing jokers well. So the cannabis moves in, there's nothing specifically for cannabis without including strawberries and blueberries and lavender or anything else for that matter. So but cannabis is the problem. None of the other. So you take the state's requirement of 12 to 13 plants, that's your split, and you say if you're going to grow cannabis, you have to go under this. It's not a conditional use permit. Not a home occupation permit. It's a cannabis cultivating permit or whatever it is. And it's a separate permit all of its own. You create that permit that you need to do that, and it has these criteria. That you're going to do this, 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 and we're going to send a letter to five adjacent property owners, your adjacent property owners, to find out what they think. Then you've got to please them. They aren't in here yelling at us, and they're not yelling at you. Yeah. You have to please them. You don't please us. If you please them and everybody checks really the boxes, don't. You're in. And you use that 12 and 13 to be commercial. Over 12, being commercial, which is exactly what our
pulled me out.
Exploratory
something
question
around,
asked,
I got to deal with it.
Was commercial growth. And if commercial growth are considered anything OLCC decides over 12 plants, then that's what it is.
So the current language that you say will suffice and meet all our needs, as we've been talking the same thing over and over again, and the language is presented, you say we'll meet that need, then why did all three of us feel like it didn't on Wednesday?
There were shortcomings. I think I'm not terribly excited about the perpetual grandfathering. I want it to stay with the applicant. I don't want it to go with the land. I'm not sure that the setback is exactly where I want it to be. I think maybe 200 feet is more reasonable. I think the 2 years of a non-conforming use is a reasonable expectation for a grow. I don't like that it doesn't solve the problem of the OHA grows that have. That's really the problem. I'd much rather focus on that, and I'm not sure how to address that. I've heard mixed things that we can regulate time, place, and manner over that, and then I've heard that we can't. And I think it's great that maybe half of that 3,000 are going to say, you know what, I'm going to do just fine under 13 plants. I'm just going to grow 12. you know, I'm going to be under the radar. I don't want all that scrutiny of tracking with OLCC and all that stuff under metrics. But half of them are going to say, no, this is a revenue stream I can't avoid, you know, so I have to do something. And getting into the metric system is what they're going to do. Then there's another third that's just going to say, no, I'm going to keep growing my 48 plants and I'm going to roll the dice and see what the feds do. Probably not going to do anything because there's non-conforming all over the place. Maybe they'll hit a couple of them, but they're going to hit my neighbors because my stuff is in the back and it's not a bother for anybody. Trying to really dial in on the real problem, which is probably the OHA stuff that isn't going to go into anything and not going to be compliant with anything. And it's really causing a hard time.
If you use a 12 plant,
you assume people are going to do it.
They're going to do it anyway. I mean, they've been doing it for 50 years.
Yeah, they're not going to go to 12 plants.
Why are they going to be now? But we've got to start somewhere.
I'm trying to figure out what is that stuff that we're given and ways to make it better. And it doesn't adversely impact people who are doing just fine and not affecting anybody.
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying if you're going to do this thing, well, I think we need something that's pointed directly at cannabis. What we have here is not going to hit all the bases. It's not going to touch all.
This is directly pointed at cannabis, Commissioner DeYoung. There's no talk of anything else being impacted by this.
That's why I want a permit that if you're going to grow more than 13 plants, it is pointed right at cannabis. And it has these requirements that you're going to get. You're going to have a survey go to your neighbors. That we set up those. If you're going to grow cannabis, then this is what you're going to do. And that's the criteria for you getting that permit.
What is the criteria?
That's what we have set up, that we have the neighbors all get to weigh in on, that you do have adequate water, so on and so on and so on. These are the things that we need to do, all nuances to cannabis. You don't have the nuances to other things that you have with cannabis.
No, I agree.
And so cannabis has set itself out over here in a lane all of its own.
You just have to define what those are, Commissioner DeYoung. And the challenge is it can't be, I mean, that's what we're getting paid the big bucks, to come up with those specific things. It can't be arbitrary, because if you leave it up to the neighbors to say, I don't like people who grow green cannabis. I want people who grow red cannabis.
I think that's
not a criteria. Water is, fence height is, setbacks is. Number
of plants
outdoors.
If we take those and say to the cannabis industry, for your cannabis advisory panel, guess what? We've decided that we're going to have something that's just strictly the cannabis.
So when are they meeting again?
October 10th.
And that's what we need to do.
It's got to be for cannabis. Because it's proposed.
The rest people out of it.
They've had it for a couple weeks. But there's some on the group that aren't interested in providing that feedback.
That's fine, and that's where the
I mean, essentially, the feedback that was provided was go with a home occupation. I'm trying to think right now.
That's what we're doing.
I understand, but that was a recommendation. Essentially, was changing a home occupation. They went to.
I think it's really important when you bring as a liaison a recommendation from one member or from the entire
Board. I brought you all four.
You know what I'm saying?
There were four recommendations, and I've brought all four.
No, I think you're missing my point. There are recommendations that the Parks Advisory Board can bring that we want to redo Whitehorse.
Yeah, the group didn't make a recommendation.
That's
they want to take
what I want to hear.
They want to take months, is what was determined.
All of them want to take months?
No, and I told you.
I know Gerard Fitzgerald's sitting right in here, and he doesn't want to take months, so.
No, and that's why I told you there were four perspectives presented. Okay. One was to go immediately to create a permit for anyone doing commercial cannabis and allow that to have the scrutiny that you see the impact on the neighborhood. There was one that said outright ban it and only allow it in exclusive farm use and resource lands, but make it possible to get housing in those areas easier so you can meet our housing needs. The next one said, I'm going to take weeks to provide my feedback. The other one said, you need to wait. So there was no consensus, so I brought you all four perspectives that were presented.
When you say they, though, that construes to me that the cannabis advisory, it's just a clarification. It's fine. I get it.
Okay.
I get it.
So I'm still trying to think of a way. I have two growers on the on the panel that say they're doing everything right and they're going to be adversely affected by this, though... I don't know that they would, because they would apply for the non-conforming and show that they're there. But they're, the only process we have right now about following this farm use is shall not interfere with the use of adjoining residential properties is to go off of complaints. Correct?
It's very subjective.
How? And that's what I'm saying. I want to define it. But interfere, I got a definition from, it's a very low standard of what interference is. Dust, smell, mist, anything else. Legal gave me a definition of interfere, and it's a very low threshold. And our code right now says shall not interfere, and it doesn't have the significant word there. It says interfere, which is a very low threshold.
So I have a 3 o'clock I'm going to jump out to. This has been a riveting conversation, but fortunately, my estimation is that we've made zero progress on the proposed text amendment. Tangible things, looking at it in front of us, of the setback requirement and those things, that's what I need to have as part of the conversation.
But I also haven't heard you.
I'm going to take Commissioner DeYoung's proposal of, I don't want to discuss this thing more than 3 times. And so a red line versions is what I'm looking for next time I come back.
Saddle me with getting you some kind of criteria, and I'll do that.
That'd be great. Appreciate it. So,
all right. Well,
we'll reconvene next week for me.
That's lovely.
Guess I'm done.
Well, and I'm going to say we all are. I got pulled out of the room because I have an emergency going on with another department I need to deal with, and so I came back so to honor that we had this on the agenda. The only thing I heard him say is he wants a 200-foot setback. I don't remember what the other thing he said. He wants us to come up with solutions, but I didn't hear any either. So
just keep in mind, when you come up with those are for new grows, because the other ones are likely, I believe, have to legally be grandfathered under the rules in place at the time that they had submitted their applications or gotten their paperwork approved.
I disagree.
Let me ask you a question. Does that include 3,000 MMP grows?
If those 3,000 had all of their paperwork in check and in compliance with all the codes administered by the department by the time the rules change, I would say yes.
And I would say that the Oregon Health Authority has been shown to not do their job. So any documentation of the Oregon Health Authority is not trustworthy. And so it's, to me, at which point they're going into OLCC is the date and time that they have to, that's their grandfather date.
Well, then that's what the code needs to say.
I thought that's what our order said. You have to have a Lux buyer. You have to be registered for OLCC by this date. To me, grandfathering in every Oregon marijuana program who hasn't gone through any scrutiny to determine if they're in compliance with our code.
Other than signing on the dotted line.
Oregon Health Authority is not a measure of compliance.
Well, and that's a question for legal. At what time, what defines do you have to grandfather them? And under what situation, under what circumstances can you?
To me, it has
compliance?
Nothing to do with getting a license from the state. It has to do with at which point did they get scrutinized by the permitting process of our department to show they're in compliance.
Well, one of the issues is, okay, let's take that a step further. Somebody came in, as of right now, when they come in for a greenhouse, they don't come in for a marijuana greenhouse, okay? Because we don't have such a thing in our code. They come in for a greenhouse.
Okay, fine.
We know it's for marijuana. We've talked to them. We've discussed this.
But if they're only applying for a building permit for a greenhouse, do you ask them if it's for tomatoes or rose bushes or anything?
No, a greenhouse is a greenhouse, according to us.
And that's what they're applying for the permit for, a building permit for the greenhouse. End of conversation. Right?
What were you saying?
Well, I'm just saying, if you know that they are applying for it for use with marijuana because they have their Lux or their OLS or their OMMP paperwork, you know, in my opinion, they have a right to be grandfathered as a marijuana growing greenhouse. They were up front. They told you that. They had the paperwork. It was approved as a marijuana, as a greenhouse in conjunction with marijuana.
I'm okay
use.
With that. But we have turned the corner. We've had the 2 years since 91. We're now addressing all of the complaints before 91.
Yeah.
Nobody had any idea how big this thing was going to get. Now that we're out here today, what we did and what OMPP, if we're saying Oregon State is getting ready to turn a corner on January 1st, And they have no reservation about changing the rules on January 1st. None. Why should we? Why should we all of a sudden go back and say, "And not, oh, now your requirement back in takes you on for perpetuity," and it doesn't.
And that's the question.
That's when we need to come back on January 1st with our own set of requirements for what now we now can recognize is a real issue. And it said so when we put out that exploratory question. When that came back, bingo. I'm saying we really need to turn the corner along with the state. And Mr. Sessions is telling it, we either turn the corner as a state, or they're going to turn the corner that a lot of people are going to enjoy, that some are really going to hate. So I think we really do. We've got to come up with something that turns the corner. And the federal government and the state of Oregon, 2 years ago when 91 came in, oh, yeah, this can happen, and OMPP and OMP and OHA, and OHA just basically said, give me your $5 and you're a medical grower. Put a box of cards on your desk, and when we come and count your plants, if you got enough cards to take the plants, you're in. Absolutely no rules and regulations. So to say that they automatically grandfather in, I disagree with that a bit, wholeheartedly. Well,
and that goes back to that question that when we started talking grandfathering last year is, do we have to grandfather, and what does that look like? It sounds to me like you're saying, don't grandfather. These are the rules, period.
Don't grandfather, no. Allow a permit.
It's not an
automatic grandfather. It's a permit you apply for.
You've gone to you're on second base. You have by no means hit home run. We're going to put third base in there, which is the permit system that we as Josephine County want. And that permit system is the one that you're going to have to go through. Yeah, you've come this far. Okay, hunky-dory. But you're going to have to go through the rest of it. And if you can't get there because of neighborhood complaints and non-compliance to the rules and regulations that we put out, which is no trailer housing, we can put anything you want in that. Only so many people on the property, and so on, so on, so on. Because the OLCC says, and if it's over 13, they got to go to OLCC, and anybody that's working on there has to be over 21. And a card carrying trimmigan or whatever that they call themselves. We can establish a set of rules going forward, and this is the time to do it. Not 6 months from now when everybody's got plants in the ground. Now we're making them tear them up. Out of respect to the grower, we need to get on this thing so that by the first year, they know these are the rules. I just got off the phone with a lady from Portland. She says, I want to buy this piece of property. And she explained where it is. I said, how big is it? She says, buck and a half. It's an acre and a half. And I said, guess what? If we get the 200-foot setback, an acre is only 203 by 203. You're not going to have any room. There's no way to get a setback to put it on there. Maybe you ought to consider 5 acres enough. She says, okay, then I probably won't do that. I'll just go find 5 acres, probably an EFU or whatever. Because then she can have the setback. She's not bothered. She's not building her marijuana grow, just like the lady that testified that had her, I got my foundation in. My house is here, my property line is here, and a marijuana grow is here. And she was basically, she didn't say it, but she says, why do I have to have a 50-foot setback to my home, and this guy doesn't have a 50-foot setback from his property line to grow?
What it sounds like you want to do then with the amendments before you is you want to strike the grandfathering provision so that there is none, is my understanding what you're saying. You want to have a setback provision in there that's not 300 feet.
I heard him say 200.
All the other provisions...
Based on a 208 square foot of a acre.
And then all of the other things that you probably want as criteria might already be addressed in there, such as greenhouses, lighting, fencing, setbacks, driveways, etc. That's all been addressed, so... Mm-hmm. It sounds like all you're looking to... It sounds to me like you're looking to strike the grandfathered language... Add language about getting a permit for it and change and have specific setbacks.
So that everybody starts at square one on January 1st.
I don't know if that's legal, but that's not my job. But if that's what you want to do, that's easy to change.
The chairman wanted me to write something up, and then I think I'll do that.
Okay.
You and I kick around.
Okay.
And Dan, it's closer to what I think is the realistic process, is that it's not grandfathering in, but you allow a permit to allow it in the section that
there is a pathway
shows if it's interfering with the neighbors. I'm not trying to keep people out who are not interfering with the neighbors, but if you grandfather the way it's written, it's not going to meet the need.
they won't.
If we grandfather, it's not you. I know you're just trying to respond to what you've been asked to do. But the current grandfathering language will not meet the needs of our community. So, but to allow those that are doing it right, they need to be allowed to apply for a permit to say, I want to be in this zone. And non-conforming or whatever you call it, because if you say it's not allowed and here's your permit to be allowed, you have to allow that. I'm trying to find a way to allow the people doing the right thing. But our current grandfathering is not going to meet that need.
And I'm you know, you're doing exactly, I don't know how you're following this target. You know, your goalposts are here and then they're here and here. And I changed my mind over and over again on this, but I think we're homing in on something. And I think we can meet, not everybody, because nobody's going to get everything out of this thing. You're not, I'm not.
Two of us have said permits. That is consistent.
But I think we need to provide a pathway that includes, that's more inclusive of the neighbors than it has been. And I know that because we have the very, when we first got on here, gosh, and people step up there and say, when we, you remember you said one complaint person, I ain't complaining. I don't like get shot at. I'm not going to have the dog biting me. You know, this is not a very good group of people we're dealing with here. I don't live next to them, but you guys do. And you're saying, you know, hey, help us here. But if they knew there was some sort of process, and yet there's good people. I've had really good growers in my office, and right here, you wouldn't know them from anybody. And they come in and say, I've got to grow at the lady from Portland.
And I want them to be able to grow.
We need to create the goalpost and how far the goalposts are apart and give them the rules of the we create the rules of the game. And if they can comply, they get the touchdown.
How much time do you need to write something up per?
What's today, Thursday? I think we ought to have it by Tuesday without any problem at all.
So do we want this on general discussion Tuesday, or are we waiting for something else?
Well, I think let me get it through Wally. I mean, it's only going to be half a dozen things.
So if you get through Wally, he can bring it back at legal?
And I think bring it back at legal to see if it flies.
Well, keep in mind when you're looking at setbacks that there's also setbacks that are proposed that are hanging out there from last year. Which talked about, you know, 100 feet off the road and things of that you might want to consider. I mean, there's stuff pending out there that we still haven't gotten to that.
I want to talk to the state, too, and I did the other day when I was up at the Capitol. But one of the big things that I think if we, and it was a suggestion that was brought to me by a constituent the other day that says, you have 1,000 complaints. What are they? Are 750 of them have a whole list of things that they're complaining about? But 750 of them are complaining about fences. I don't like that fence next to me. Or how many are barking dogs? How many are water? How many are? I don't know if you could do a spreadsheet on that without.
You know,
maybe take 200 of them and get a cross section, and figure out what those complaints are, and then we'll say to the grower, "Is this a complaint?" Oh, you know, I got that too. I got a grower next to me. I'm trying to run a legitimate operation, but the guy two fields over. He's got the barking dogs and the gunfire and the trucks and the trimmigants and the sewage coming off of his place is running into my place, and I don't like that either. And you're going to find that a lot of that, I think if I were to take a thumbs up, you're not allowed to do that in a business session or any of the forums we've had. How many people have an issue with fences? And across the room, they'll go, because why? It's taking away from the scenic beauty of Southern Oregon. And if you could just do away with that, I wouldn't know. Driving by, I wouldn't know now, but had I not known before, I'll bet you I've driven by 300 pot grows and had absolutely no idea they were there. Other than maybe, what's that? Elderberries? Heck, I didn't know what it was. It's green.
So I don't.
I had no idea. But that's a state issue, and I'm willing to lobby the state to say we need to draw our own rules up about what we want to see in our county. Not what the state says we need to see in our county. I think that's where your cannabis panel could say, weigh in on what are your requirements? Or, you know, is it security you're worried about on a fence? Or is it just because the state tells you to put up a fence, you put up the black plastic or the cedar boards or whatever it is?
They can't do black plastics as of October.
Well, I know.
The other ordinance goes in effect.
You get what I'm talking about.
I can't leave to go take care of the thing I need to take care of.
Until we're done.
Until you're done. So I'm just going to encourage us to find a way to get done because I have to go put out a fire.
This is hard to do, but I'll shut up.
I'm just bringing it up because I want to give you the time that you need, but I also can't
leave.
I'd
love to talk, but I'm out of air.
Okay. So I think that's the best thing is I've been very clear for me that I want to allow to me it was a home occupation or a commercial permit, whatever it is, that if you're going to have a business in a rural residential, you have to have a permit. Every meeting I've said that. My opinion is still the same. To maintain the purpose of rural residential, if you can draft something up and work through Wally and Julie and bring it back to us, then that'll determine when the next meeting is on it.
Makes
once
sense.
You guys you are ready to bring that for. Mm-hmm. Okay.
No, good.
I canceled my second surgery.
Are you serious?
Yeah, it's just I'm pushing it back a month. So let's hurry up and get it done.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah.
Okay, is there any other matters from commissioners?
No.
Then at 3:19, we're adjourned.